Hello, this is Warren Hoyt. Glad to be with you again. Want to continue today talking about Making Sense of God, a good book by Dr. Timothy Keller, who's a pastor in Manhattan, although he's recently announced his retirement. Last time we looked at kind of what Dr. Keller talked about in the preface of the book. Today I want to look at chapter one briefly. He says a lot of people today believe religion is dying out, and I made that point in going over the preface with you. But a lot of people believe that. They say that as people become more educated, they'll give up their quote-unquote myths. And religion is just another myth. And so, you know, as we're becoming more advanced and so forth, that we're going to do away with those myths. However, as Dr. Keller brings out, and as a lot of other authors and scholars do, statistics and studies just don't bear this out. Actually, religion is growing all over the world, and that's backed up by a lot of studies. Dr. Keller mentions a 2015 Pew study. He gives you the website where you can look that up and so on. So much to atheists' chagrin, religious belief is growing in the U.S. and throughout the world. Christianity is particularly thriving in Latin America, Asia, and Africa, in case you didn't know it. He says, Keller does, that belief in God makes sense to about 4 out of 5 people in the world and will continue to do so in the foreseeable future. For another master's course I just started taking, I had to read a book by sociologist Rodney Stark. I've often referred to his books over the years in my sermons. He's a sociologist, and he just presents a lot of good information. He says that his studies show, in the book The Rise of Christianity, that's what I'm reading now, his studies show that even the segment of our society which identifies with no religion, and I don't know if you've heard of this, but it's a new thing, and they call themselves the nuns, not like Catholic nuns, N-U-N, but none, N-O-N-E. So they're the nuns. They don't have, what religion do you practice? None. And it's interesting, Rodney Stark says even nuns who don't practice any religion actually turn out to be statistically more prone to believe in spiritual things that are unconventional, even if they don't identify with any traditional religion. They believe in things like astrology, yoga, reincarnation, Wicca, ghosts, etc., etc. By the way, Stark's studies also show that the more educated are more likely to accept new religions and cults. That's very interesting, too, because a lot of people think if you get educated, you won't believe in any religion. Studies show just the opposite. More educated people accept cults and new religions much more quickly. It's counterintuitive, perhaps, but it's statistical. So Keller says there are two main reasons why religion continues to thrive. Number one, because the great majority of people find that secularism comes up lacking in terms of what people need to live well. And number two, great numbers of people intuitively sense a transcendent realm beyond this natural world. Regarding the first point, Keller says that a Chinese woman came to his church and told him after the service how even the communists of Red China are realizing that the Christian idea of transcendence was the historic basis for concepts of human rights and equality. And by the way, I might add morality too. I had a friend in my church who went to China, and they actually called for him and his youth ministry to come over there to teach on morality because they realized their communist system had no way of, no basis for teaching that. And so the point is, science alone cannot prove human equality. Not even human equality, you know. Science doesn't prove that. Doesn't prove lots of other things either. Rationality, science, these are good things. We're not against them. But they're only good in the areas where they apply. They can't decide moral issues or give human beings a sense of worth. And Keller says, terrible deeds have been done in the name of religion. But guess what? Secularism hasn't proven to be an improvement, unquote. And as an illustration, he talks about the eugenics movement of the early 20th century. And you've probably heard of the Scopes trial, the monkey trial, you know, where William Jennings Bryan came down and argued with Clarence Darrow about this teacher who was trying to teach evolution in the schools. And they made a movie out of it and everything. A lot of people don't know, Keller says, that the same textbook that that teacher was using, who was on trial there, that same textbook that taught evolution, it also taught eugenics, and it argued, quote, that science dictated we should sterilize or even kill those classes of people who weaken the human gene pool by spreading disease, immorality, and crime to all parts of the country. And so this was typical of scientific textbooks of the time. That's a quote. Keller goes on to point out that there are genetic links to antisocial behaviors and such. And so scientifically, a case can be made for eugenics and forced sterilization. Hey, you know, certain people have these genes that cause them to do bad things. They become criminals or they're a problem. And so scientifically, you can make a case that we should eliminate such people. But it wasn't science that refuted this and got people to turn from eugenics. What really got people to turn from it was World War II and afterward, when a lot of folks got over there to Germany and saw the death camps. And you didn't have to have science to tell you that was evil. People just knew this is evil. See, it was very scientific, but it's evil, and you could know that. You can't find support for it being evil in science. Science doesn't tell you what's evil and what's moral and what's good and all that kind of stuff. You only find support for those kind of ideas in religion and Judeo-Christian religion mainly. So, Keller's not saying science and reason are bad. Of course it's not. We need them. They're good. He's just saying that alone, they're not enough. He says, quote, science is a magnificent material force, but it's not a teacher of morals. It can perfect machinery, but it adds no moral restraints to protect society from the misuse of the machine. Science does not and cannot teach brotherly love. Secular scientific reason is a great good, but if taken as the sole basis for human life, it'll be discovered there are too many things we need that it is missing. And so that's why a lot of people refuse to give up religion, even in the scientific age, because they realize that just science and reason don't provide all that human beings need for living. Here's another quote. If anything has to have a scientific explanation and proof, then this is to banish not only God from the world, but also love, hate, meaning, and it would be a world which is self-evidently not the world that we're living in. If you have to have a scientific explanation for everything, you'd get rid of love. You'd get rid of hate. You'd get rid of meaning. Not to mention God. But that's not how we live. If we assert, which basically everyone does, that love, meaning, and morals do not merely feel real, but actually are so, well, science can't support that. Think about it. Science can't support love, meaning, and morals. But we believe in them. We just know that they're real, that they're true. So the point is, scientific knowledge is inapplicable to the central aspects of human life, including hope, love, beauty, honor, suffering, and virtue. I think that's pretty obvious, don't you? Then he talks about how there was a professor at Harvard, this one Christian lady was taking a class with him, a psychology professor, and he was telling about how this therapist uncovered deep hostility and anger in a patient that he had toward his mother. And how when they dealt with that anger and hostility he had toward his mother, that helped this man to be free. So after the class, this Christian lady asked the professor how he would have helped that patient forgive. And he basically said, well, you know, forgiveness implies moral responsibility and many other things that scientific psychology just doesn't speak to. So she said, yeah, but you got to help the person. He said, don't try to force your values on patients. And so some of the other students were kind of shocked at that. The point is just that secular reason all by itself doesn't give a basis for things like forgiveness and sacrifice or redemption or things like that. So it's just not adequate. And that's why religious belief isn't going away, because reason and all, which everybody touts nowadays, is so great, they just don't address those kinds of things. The second reason Keller says religion isn't going away is, to explain it, he talks about another professor who said that he's an atheist, but he wakes up at night wondering how everything could be meaningless. How could life be so meaningless? I'm just going to die and all my work is going to perish and, everything I love will disappear. How could it be that it's just for nothing? And so, you know, a lot of people think that in their quiet moments. And people just have an instinctive feeling that life has to be worth more than just what we see or what we measure or add up and so forth. There has to be something behind it all. And Keller mentions that even Steve Jobs pondered this kind of thing, and he hoped that something of himself would survive death. So there's a need for something beyond the physical. There's a need for something transcendent, and that's why religion isn't going away. And to talk about this further, Keller talks about things like beauty. And he says, why do we appreciate beauty? You know, art, painting, or the beauty of nature or something like that. Was it just something that helped our ancestors survive and so they passed it on to our genes? Is that why we appreciate beauty? Come on. You know, he says, if you're being swept up in joy by something beautiful, art, music, nature, quote, it'll impoverish you to remind yourself that this feeling you have is simply a chemical reaction that helped your ancestors find food and escape predators, unquote. Of course, we know that beauty is transcendent. We can't explain it, but we just know it. And so then Keller, he also talks about experiences people have had, even committed atheists, with something that sort of filled them with a sense of wonder or purpose or some such emotion, and he even calls it fullness, a sort of perception that life is greater than can be accounted for by naturalistic explanations. And he says, if this life is all there is, why do we long so deeply for something that doesn't exist and never did? Why are there so many experiences that even people who don't believe in such things have had which point to something beyond the secular worldview? The fact is that despite all our scientific progress, curiosity about higher things, you know, things beyond, just come naturally to most human beings. Actually, it's indifference to them that has to be learned. You have to be trained to not think that there's some meaning for life and something beyond this life and so on. You have to train yourself to not think of such things. It's a learned behavior. The natural thing is for us to wonder about what's beyond death and what's the meaning of life and so on. Quote, strict secularism holds that people are only physical entities without souls, that when loved ones die, they simply cease to exist, that sensations of love and beauty are just neurological chemical events, that there is no right or wrong outside of what we and our minds determine and choose. Those positions are at the very least counterintuitive for nearly all people, and large swaths of humanity will continue to simply reject them as impossible to believe. I really like that quote. See, the religion isn't going anywhere. Large swaths of humanity just reject the notion that there's no God out there, that there's no purpose out there, there's no such thing as love or beauty, science has got it all. Large swaths, 4 out of 5 people, they're just going to reject that. Well, then he says, people ask, why do people feel they need religion? And he says, after explaining all these things, some of which I've just touched on, he says, now maybe we can see that the way the question is phrased doesn't explain the persistence of faith. It's, you know, why do you need the religion? Why do you feel a need for religion? That's not the right way to ask the question. He says, people believe in God not merely because they feel some emotional need, but because it makes sense of what they see and experience. Indeed, he says, we've seen that many thoughtful people are drawn toward belief somewhat unwillingly. They embrace religion because they think it's more fully true to the facts of human existence than secularism is. I think that's important. You see, religion isn't going anywhere because people know deep inside that it makes more sense than the non-religious worldview. Sociologists Peter Bergen and Grace Davey report that, quote, most sociologists of religion now agree that the secularization thesis that religion declines as society becomes more modern has been empirically shown to be false, unquote. Think about this. Countries such as China are becoming more religious and, by the way, more Christian, even as they modernize. This April of 2015 Pew study projects that the percentage of atheists, agnostics, and the religiously unaffiliated will slowly but steadily decline from 16.4% of the world's population today to about 13.2% 40 years from now. University of London professor Eric Kaufman, in his book, Shall the Religious Inherit the Earth?, speaks of the crisis of secularism and argues that the shrinkage of secularism and liberal religion is inevitable. Yeah, the number of the nuns, you know, not Catholic nuns, but N-O-N-E-S, the number of the nuns in the U.S. is increasing, but most of them, guess what? It's interesting. Most of them come from liberal churches, not conservative ones. Secularization, quote, here's a quote, mainly erodes the taken-for-granted moderate faiths that trade on being mainstream and established. Therefore, the very liberal, moderate forms of religion most people think are most likely to survive will not. Conservative religious bodies, by contrast, have a very high retention rate of their children, and they convert more than they lose, unquote. By the way, they might hate this one, but religious people also just tend to have more children than secular people. This holds true across the world and every national group, every educational level, and every economic class. The most secular societies, as in Europe, are maintained by immigration, and mostly immigration of religious people, not by their own birth rates. They don't have kids. They don't believe in it. They don't want to bring kids into the world. No, they don't, because of their beliefs, their secular view. The Broadway hit called The Book of Mormon, I guess it was pretty popular, and Keller mentions it because he's from New York, says it played real well to secular audiences because it presented the idea of Mormon missionaries who came to realize that their scripture was just sort of a metaphor, and the real point was just to love people and make the world a better place. So liberals, they liked that Broadway hit. They really liked those kind of ideas because they think that's more viable. Just, love people, make the world a better place. You don't need any religion. You don't need any scriptures. But sociologists have shown that this kind of quote-unquote faith is dying in the world. Faiths that rely on conversion are the ones that are growing exponentially. Inherited religion, the kind you're born into, is what's dying out. But chosen religion is not. People are choosing religion, they're choosing Christ every day. I'll end up with just some more statistics here. The growth of Christianity in the world, says Keller, is just amazing. By 2020, Christianity will have grown from 11.4 million Christians in East Asia, China, Korea, and Japan in 1970, and 1.2% of the population, to 171.1 million, and 10.5% of the population. In 1910, only 12 million people, or 9% of Africa's population, were Christians, but they will number 630 million, or 49.3% of the population by 2020. Last Sunday, in each of the nations of Nigeria, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, and South Africa, there were more Anglicans in church than there were Anglicans and Episcopalians in all of Britain and the U.S. combined. And so that Professor Eric Kaufman, I mentioned a bit before, he was asked by the New Humanist magazine whether secularism might turn the tide and do a better job of winning people over. But he replied that religion provides enchantment, meaning, and emotion, which secularism lacks. Ha! Could have told you. So Keller's point in this first chapter is just to say, number one, religion isn't going anywhere. And number two, secularism lacks a lot of things. He says he hasn't proved anything one way or the other. He's just making the point that religion isn't irrelevant and it would be worth your while if you're just a skeptic, you don't believe in it or whatever. It'd be worth your while to check into it, if only to just better understand these trends that are happening in the world. But I believe it's, and he believes, that the points he's going to make in the rest of the book are also very, very valid, because he's going to show why Christianity really makes more sense than secularism. I hope you'll stay tuned. I'll try to be brief on different ones and do a little thing on each chapter and just give you the main ideas. I'd love to hear from you and discuss this with you, because I think it's very relevant. Just hope that you'll stay tuned here, or that you'll get the book yourself. Again, it's Making Sense of God by Dr. Timothy Keller, and I'll talk to you next time.